everyone. Welcome to the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast. I am your host, Diane Bondi. And I like to come on here occasionally and just talk about some of the current events going on in the world. And I had an interesting situation happen to me. As most of you know, I do teach joyful intentional movement in the form of yoga, Pilates, group cycling, spin. I just like the idea of people finding peace and power in their body. You might hear a little bit of Mozart in the background because that helps calm me. It's part of my new practice is to play a little bit of classical music, the things that I grew up on, the things that I studied to when I was in high school. I studied to Mozart, and it gives me this calm feeling when I'm talking about current events. So right now it is the last week of September going into October. Damn, did the summer go by quickly, and I can't believe we are rounding out September. And by the time you're hearing this podcast, it might be early October, and a lot will have changed already. So an interesting thing happened to me at work. So I digress, I backtrack. I was teaching a yoga class the other night, and there were two women sitting in the lounge outside the yoga studio space. And one of them was on the phone speaking, and she was wearing a hijab, and she was crying. And all I could think about was how incredibly hard this must be and how brave she was to come to class and take care of herself in the midst of what is all going on. And if you haven't heard, Mahsa Amini, and if I'm pronouncing her name incorrectly, I apologize, a woman who was detained and then killed by the Iranian morality police for not wearing her hijab properly. They felt too much of her hair was exposed. And that sparked a huge protest in Iran for women and men who were pushing back against the morality police and against the people who keep them from having their own personal freedoms. And I've had an opportunity to talk to a few, not a lot, of Muslim women about how they feel. It's a hard topic to broach. And the majority of feedback that I've gotten is it should be a woman's choice. You should get to choose whether you want to wear one or not. And what has struck me is the protests, how women have come out in the street after what has happened and are protesting by cutting their hair and in some cases burning the hijab. And that this is not a religious issue. It's an issue of control and oppression. And it's been hard to watch the world over the past 4 years start to slide into a place where oppression is becoming more and more commonplace and acceptable. Not too long ago, the United States rolled back Roe v. Wade. And Roe v. Wade happened in the course of my lifetime. So in the course of my lifetime, access to abortion care has always been the right of the person seeking the abortion, a conversation to have with them and their doctors. And now, just last week, Senator Lindsey Graham, who has no children, as far as his website goes, no family, has decided to create a countrywide abortion ban based on what he believes. And that's frightening. It's frightening for all of us involved because it is a slippery slope. Like, what other rights and freedoms can we start taking back? And when you look at the makeup of governments around the world. And let's just look at the government in the Americas for right now, in North America in particular. I live in Canada, and I live not too far from the United States. I live in a border town. And what's interesting to me is it was much posed in a question around who holds the majority of power in society still in the 21st century that can allow men, primarily rich white men, primarily rich white old men, to make unilateral decisions for all of us without walking a moment in our shoes. And so this has been something that has been weighing heavily. And the question that was posed probably about 4 years ago, in looking at the makeup of our legislative systems and the representation that lies in there, is it possible that if they wanted to roll back women's right to vote, could that happen? And I know that sounds like hyperbole and it sounds so far-fetched, but I would have never thought in my lifetime that we would see the rollback of Roe v. Wade. And to be clear, here in Canada, abortion isn't legal, but it's not illegal. So it's not codified into law, which needs to happen before the next election, because at the rate of the way the world is unfolding toward extremism, fascism, and the leaning to the right, and not just to the right, but to the extreme right, that could be something that happens here in Canada if we were to get a conservative government in the next election. To roll back women's right to choose their own destiny, roll back women's right to get the care that they need. And that scares me. Not too long ago, I was listening to Pete Buttigieg, and he was talking about how the world is shifting and that perhaps we have reached the watermark of progress and now we're regressing backwards, that more and more rights are going to be eroded. And I thought it was interesting to have him speak on it. Not only is he in charge of transportation in the United States, he's part of the administration. He's also married and has a family. And his rights to marry his partner, I think, are next on the chopping block. And it's quite a slippery slope. We've had same-sex marriage in Canada for a long time, for probably, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 years prior to America creating their constitutional rights to marriage, or expanding their constitutional rights to marriage. So we crossed that bridge long ago. The joke in Canada was, we don't really care who you're married to, we just care what hockey team you're rooting for. But when Pete Buttigieg made the analogy around the watermark and how systemically our rights are being rolled back, it scares me, because in grade 12, I took Canadian and American literature. So when we were in grade 12, we got to pick, might have been grade 13 at the time. I know I'm old. In Canada, we used to go to high school for 5 years. You went to go to grade 13. Then they got rid of grade 13 sometime in the mid 80s. And then you had Ontario academic credits if you were in Ontario, which is essentially grade 13. You had to take 6 academic credits in order to be eligible to go to university. If you were going to college, then which is different here. College is more like I don't want to call it a trade school, but you can learn the trades at college. You can take business admin. College is probably like an associate's degree in the United States, where it's like usually a 2-year program or a 3-year program, where university is generally a 4-year program. I know you can get a 3-year degree as well, but when we were going into our OAC and our credits to, you know, to move into school, I just remember taking, we had the option to take a media course for English, media literacy in English, or we got to take literature. So I decided I would take a Canadian literature class, Canadian American literature, and we read John Steinbeck, we read Margaret Atwood, we read Margaret Lawrence, we read John Updike. There was a bunch of different authors that we read, but we read two books by Margaret Atwood. One was The Handmaid's Tale and the other was The Edible Woman. And it was talking about the erasure of women's rights. And as that show, The Handmaid's Tale, became a huge critical success on television, it really does mirror what is happening. It's really quite frightening to watch The Handmaid's Tale and see it unfold in real life, where art imitates life or life imitates art. But what does that mean for all of us, right? As we watch Iran crack down and try to block out social media and try to blame the United States of triggering unrest due to the death of a woman in police custody, like, because we're still sharing these stories. This is a really scary time, right? It's the biggest protest in 3 years. People are pushing back. And the more I watch the world kind of lean to the right, the more scared I become. Like, what does this mean, right? I'm watching the protests happening here. I'm hopeful that the rise of Iranian women to have a sense of their own power is felt everywhere, because it is clear to me that we are trying really hard to silence women. And as a Black woman, I'm always choosing my words carefully, and I'm always trying to figure out what my best course of action is. And I'm always trying not to be part of the three stereotypes that have been written for me, which is the Jezebel. The idea behind that is highly sexualized, maybe considered promiscuous, a lot of slut shaming around that. You may be considered highly sexualized or, you know, very seductive, right? That's the Jezebel. And then there's the mammy. And if you've seen Gone with the Wind, I think it's clear. Or if you've ever seen an Aunt Jemima box, or if you've ever seen the show Give Me a Break in the 80s with Nell Carter, she very much played that mammy character. And it's always a character which is devoid of any dimensional representation, constantly looking after white folks, you know. Not a full realized human being, a servant. So there's the Jezebel, there's the mammy, and then there's the sapphire. And the sapphire is that outspoken woman who commands attention and is argumentative and has no sense of humor and, you know, is the archetype of the angry Black woman. And those are the stories that are written for us as Black women. So we know what it feels like to not be heard. And we know what it feels like to be criticized and disrespected by everybody. It doesn't matter. As Black women, we fall pretty far down on the food chain in terms of commanding respect, even though we will show up for our communities time and time again. There is always something about disempowering a Black woman that allows for the oppression of all women, right? To normalize the oppression of all women. So as we continue to move forward and as midterm elections come up, I want you to remember who is looking out for you. Because we tend to have a really short memory when it comes to choosing politicians that are actually going to stand up for us. I think we get caught up in the minutiae and we forget where they stood on issues and policies and proposals and laws that affect us and our families. And it's time for us to pay attention. And if you're not paying attention, it's time. Like, I know it's hard. I know we're overwhelmed. I know it's one thing after another. I know our central nervous system is exhausted. I know our adrenal glands are depleted. But that's why it's important to take some intentional well-being in order to continue to show up in a way that is meaningful. Our self-care, and I want to be really clear on this, can't undo systems of oppression that are hardwired into how society is set up. I know that that self-care can't change those things. But what self-care and intentional well-being can do is give us the energy to fight another day and allow us to be discerning about what's important to us so that we don't get caught up in every single cause, because you can only do so much. You only have so much time and energy that you can devote with your whole heart. So you have to find the cause that really speaks to you and understand as many causes as there are out there to fight for, there are people out there fighting for them. So find what makes you passionate, what brings the fire to your belly, what makes you want to stand up, stand out, and bring change. And know that change is long and hard, right? This is what I've learned in my existence of, you know, being on the planet for half a century. It takes a long time for real change to happen. But once it starts happening, I feel like it has momentum and it can move quickly. So that's why it's important for us to really filter our news feeds. So here are some tips for intentional well-being in the activist, ally, or co-conspirator space. Okay. Number one, filter your news feed. Okay. So I choose to watch my news feed in the morning when I wake up to check out what's going on in the day. And unless there's a story that's unfolding that I'm very interested in, I don't keep going back to the feed because it's a loop, right? If you're watching any of the cable news shows, it's a loop. It keeps repeating the same stories over and over. Okay. So first things first, filter your news feed. What are the stories that you really want to pay attention to, or that you feel you have some impact on, or you have a platform you can share about that? And choose those issues. So filter that. Looking at the news once a day is enough. If there's anything super important that's happening in the world, trust and believe somebody will tell you about it. Making sure that you are taking some time off social media, because social media is fraught with all kinds of nonsense and trolls and bullshit and all the things. So really curate your feed. Go into your favorites and choose the folks that really feed your soul, that really help you to gain perspective, people who educate you on the things that you don't know in the causes that you are fighting. So a lot of the people that I curate on my social media feeds are educators, and they give me lots of insight into what I'm watching, giving me different perspectives. I think that's important. Cultivate friendships around you. This is three. That aren't only friendships where you are in service to others or others are in service to you, but friendships that are just fun. And I remember when I only primarily taught yoga. So for 20 years, my yoga practice was the biggest part of my existence. I mean, it still is in terms of filtering the world, right? Not so much that it takes up a lot of space in my world, my children, my family, my husband. Those are the things that take up the majority of the space in my world. But how I filter the world and how I see the world is through the lens of yoga. And so I taught a lot of asana classes. And so all of my friends were yoga teachers. And so I had a very limited view of the world because I was only interacting with other yoga teachers. So expand your friendship circle to include folks that don't look like you, folks that have different experiences of the world, so that you can have a more well-rounded experience of the world, and that you're not just in an echo chamber, so to speak, so that you can hear other points of views and see other people's lived experiences. Look around and see if your friends all look like you and their experiences are all very similar to you, and expand that friend group. And the first thing somebody always asks me is, how do I make new friends as an adult? It's tough. So you'll have to join a reading group or take a class at a college or university, or there's lots of streaming things online that you can be a part of. It's however we made friends as children. We have to figure out how to transfer that to making friends as an adult. And it all depends on your personality as well. I make friends relatively easy because I have a big personality. I'm very gregarious, right? I like everybody. I'm a social person. I'm an extrovert. So I make friends relatively easily. The other thing that I would also suggest, I don't know if we're on point four or five, on the flip side of that, weed your garden. If there are people in your life who just are constantly taking and not giving, then it's time for you to move away from those folks or limit your access to those folks or set some really great boundaries. So one of the intentional well-being, I don't want to call it a prop, but a resource, that's a better word, is to actually take some time to look at your life and decide who brings you joy, who is supportive, who is at your shoulder to lean on, who do you have fun with, and start to notice how you feel when you hang around or you're in the company of others, and look out to where you can weed that garden. And take your time in getting to know people, right? If you have a friend that the more you get to know them, the less you like them, then it's time to, you know, start to ease back or back up slowly, right? And last but not least, get some rest. Honestly, if you can go to bed 15 or 20 minutes earlier, you know, the laundry can wait till another day. If there's any way that you can take 2, 3, 4, or 5 minutes out of your life and just take a few minutes to yourself where you're not in an obligation to anyone else, right? Can you do that? So for our intentional well-being moment today, I'm going to invite you to breathe with me. So wherever you are listening to this podcast, unless you're driving, of course you want to keep your eyes open. But if you're sitting listening to this podcast, I want you to get really comfortable. Scoot your bottom back into the seat, lean back on the chair, and then just take a body scan. So starting at the tip of our toes, moving up our ankles, noticing the bottom of our feet, maybe spreading the toes, noticing the ankles. And if you want to flex the feet or circle the ankles, you can do that. Or if you just want to bring attention there and just kind of notice what's going on. And then from the ankles, start moving up through the calves. And if your knee is sore like mine is, send a little bit of love to your knees and just acknowledge all the ways they show up for you and the practices that you do, whether that's walking or sitting or laying down, like however your knees are here to support you. Moving up the legs to the waist, the glutes, and then to your tummy, bringing your awareness to your tummy. And I like to think of my tummy as my sixth sense. When I get that dropping feeling in my stomach, I know I have to pay attention to what's going on, right? So notice how your tummy is feeling. Perhaps send it a little bit of love. And moving up along the spine, out to the shoulders and the arms. And notice if the shoulders are creeping up around the ears. And allow them to relax. Notice if you're clenching your jaw. And allow that to relax. Notice if the space between your eyebrows is holding tension, and see if you can just maybe even rub that space or smooth it out a little bit. And then taking your right thumb, and let's just start to massage our fingers a little bit. So rubbing your thumb over your fingers, over the palm of your hand, massaging your fingers. And then massaging your palm. And just moving your fingertips and your hands in a way that feels good. And if that's not possible, then coming to your breath. You can still continue to connect with your hands or any other parts of your body. And if that's not possible, I want you to come to your breath. And I just want you to slow it down. Deepen the inhale. Deepen the exhale. Breathing deeply and slowly and mindfully. And with each exhalation, allowing the shoulders to get it softer and moving away from the ears. Softening between those eyebrows. Noticing if you're holding any tension in the jaw. And just slowly breathing and being in your body. And then stay here for as long as you like, breathing deeply and slowly as you enjoy just being in your body for a few moments. Be intentional with your breath. And using that same intention that you use with your breath to move into the world. Choose the things that you want to fight for with intention. Choose the friendship groups that make you happy, inspired, connected. And let everything else, all that other noise, fall away. Be intentional with yourself. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I want to invite you to share this with anybody in your space that you think may or could use this little reminder to remember to show up, because it's important to remember to be intentional. If you could give us a like on Apple Podcasts, rate, share, that would be great. It would really help us out. Until the next time, moisturize and revolutionize. Thanks, everybody.